European ministers approve a measure aimed at reducing energy reliance on Russian gas a day before Gazprom says it would reduce supply by 80%.
15% would probably not be enough given what the Russians have just announced, a further reduction.
Plus, Russia continues its attacks on Mykolaiv.
There is a danger of missile attacks, and actually missile attacks are happening every day and every night, and particularly very early in the morning.
And later in the program, the effect Russia's war on Ukraine is having on African food supplies as several communities face another drought. Today is Tuesday, July 26th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. European Union ministers met on Tuesday, approving a proposal to curb their gas demand, with opt-outs allowing them to follow different national paths to prepare for Russian supply cuts. Russia's Gazprom said it would cut flows through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline to Germany to a fifth of its capacity beginning on Wednesday. The European Commission proposed a plan last week that would cut consumption by 15%. At least one minister raised doubts about the potential effectiveness of the measure, like Irish Transport and Environment Minister Eamon Ryan.
15% would probably not be enough, given what the Russians have just announced, a further reduction in their gas supplies through Nord Stream 1. But it's better than not having it, and I think the signal it sends is also important to our citizens and to the wider world.
The agreement involves voluntary reductions between August and March and will also allow member states to stockpile supplies ahead of the coming winter months. In case of emergency, the EU could make the cuts mandatory, although with certain exemptions that were agreed to as part of a compromise in order to reach the agreement. With a dozen EU countries already facing reduced Russian supplies, Brussels is urging countries to prepare by saving gas and storing it for winter, for fear Russia will completely cut off the flows in retaliation for Western sanctions over its war in Ukraine. Recently, Russian President Vladimir Putin also accused Canada of sabotaging Russia's ability to supply Europe with natural gas. Polygraph.info explains why that is not true.
On July 20th, Russian President Vladimir Putin accused Canada of sabotaging Russia's ability to supply Europe with natural gas. He said Canada might delay repairs on a pump for Nord Stream 1, the pipeline that brings gas to Germany via the North Sea. Putin blamed sanctions over Russia's war against Ukraine for the delay. He said, quote, "One machine needs planned repairs. It is not giving back from Canada because sanctions have been placed against Gazprom. That is false. In fact, sanctions don't apply to Gazprom, the majority Russian-owned energy behemoth. Canada did send the repairs turbine back to Siemens Energy, Gazprom's partner in Germany. Canada had exempted Gazprom from sanctions for 2 years. US and European officials said Russia is using energy as a weapon in its war on Ukraine. Before the war, Russia supplied about 40% of Europe's natural gas. Now, European authorities are hoping to cut consumption by 15%. Russia has already reduced gas exports to Europe. Fearing a total cutoff, Europe is looking for ways to diversify energy supplies."
Polygraph.info is a fact-checking website that's produced by the Voice of America. The website serves as a resource for verifying the increasing amount of disinformation as well as misinformation that's being distributed and shared globally. Ukraine's military reported Russian missiles struck areas of the Ukrainian Black Sea coast on Tuesday. The attacks hit multiple locations, including the Odessa area and the port infrastructure in the city of Mykolaiv. Joining us from Kyiv is reporter Anna Chernikova. Anna, what can you tell us about this latest attack on the port city of Odessa?
Unfortunately, for the past couple of days and over the last weekend as well, the south regions like Odessa and Mykolaiv were under quite an aggressive shelling and a lot of missile attacks. This all goes, you know, in line with Istanbul agreement that was signed, so-called grain agreement. But still, but we still see that fightings and attacks are happening in this region. What we know from today that over the night it was an attack on Odessa region and Mykolaiv region. In Odessa, the missiles targeted private area with private buildings. In Mykolaiv region, the target was the port infrastructure. According to the military officials in the region, the missiles were hit from the aviation from the direction of the Black Sea. At least nine missiles hit Mykolaiv region. We don't have final information regarding the casualties, but we know that there are quite a lot of damages of the critical infrastructure and civil infrastructure.
And Anna, while we have been discussing the attacks on Odessa, the attacks on Kherson, and the front lines in general, can you give us a little bit more context about where Mykolaiv fits in with all this?
Yeah, the Mykolaiv region in general is one of the closest areas in terms of the front line. And yesterday, Mykolaiv officials announced evacuation from some villages in this area because of the a very high danger for the civilian residents. We know that these people were evacuated to Odessa region, and it looks like that evacuation will continue when it's possible. But we don't have confirmation that today any evacuation is happening. However, the head of Mykolaiv region continued to announce that there is a danger of missile attacks, and actually missile attacks are happening every day and every night, and particularly very early in the morning we receive confirmations and information in general about certain hits by the Russian missiles. Today one of the ports in Mykolaiv region was hit. We know about damages, but still more detailed information is to come soon. Due to security reasons, we don't have any details from the officials.
And I also wanted to ask you about grain shipments, because over the weekend, Russia attacked the port city of Odessa, damaged some infrastructure. Additional attacks took place overnight into this morning. But Ukrainian officials are saying that as early as Wednesday, Ukraine could begin shipping grain out of the port cities onto the Black Sea. What can you tell us about that assessment?
Yes, Ukrainian government is quite positive about the beginning of grain exports. We know that today the coordination center started its work, and this coordination center will monitor the grain, so-called grain corridors. The members of this center includes Turkey officials and Ukrainian officials. And we know that Ukrainian Minister of Infrastructure, together with the Minister of Defense of Turkey, had a meeting already, and they said that the coordination center started quite an intensive work. So this could mean probably that actually the grain exports are to happen sometime soon. Again, Minister of Infrastructure mentioned that he cannot provide any more details regarding the plans of these experts, but according to his information, this could happen quite soon. So in the next couple of days, maybe. But again, this is very important, and Ukrainian side continued to remind everyone that it's very important, of course, that Russian forces do not shell this area, because, of course, the companies that would provide their vessels for the export should feel a certain safety.
Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Millions of Ukrainians have fled to neighboring countries since Russia invaded their homeland. Others have moved to Western Ukraine and the city of Lviv, for which now is relatively safe. Anna Kostachenko has this story of volunteers in Lviv who are opening their homes to the displaced families.
Playing outside, jumping on a trampoline, and walking in the garden. These are the things that 3.5-year-old Matvey loves. The only thing that would make it even better is if Matvey's father joined him. But that's not possible. His father went to war.
Here next to me is my main motivator. He's not my child, not my grandson. But we have been friends since the day we met, and I am glad to see him every day.
Serhiy and Halina Rubanov welcomed Matvey and his family in their home on the outskirts of Lviv in March, after Matvey's family had to flee Kharkiv, which Russian troops have been shelling since they invaded the country on February 24th.
We looked out of the window. It looked like fog. It sounded like thunder, too, but very loud. Then we turned on the TV and learned that we were being attacked by our so-called brothers.
On March 4th, the whole family, including Matvey's disabled great-grandmother and their dog, left Kharkiv. When they arrived in Lviv, volunteers placed them in a temporary shelter where a local family offered them housing.
His grandfather and his father brought this boy to us and then went back to fight at the battlefield. What is the most precious thing in our country? Our children, our grandchildren. Is it possible to fight knowing the children are in danger?
Here, Matvey's family found a home away from home. They cook, they go to grocery shopping, they even grow vegetables on a small porch. Matvey's mother, Katerina, says it helps to have some normalcy in the family's everyday life.
When we got here, we needed some distraction, and Galina gave us such an opportunity. So we planted some radishes, green onions, parsley, and potatoes. Serhiy helped us with everything.
Even though they're safe here, the war has left its toll on the family. Matvey is still afraid of loud noises.
He's very anxious, afraid of loud noises and flying planes. Sorry. He has this blanket with him. He's had it since he was a baby.
Katerina and her family pray the war finishes soon and Matvey's father and grandfather return home alive. And then Katerina dreams her little son will stop being afraid of loud noises. Anna Kostyuchenko for Voice of America News, Lviv, Ukraine.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. The trial of U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner resumed in a Russian courtroom on Tuesday. Griner, who's a Women's National Basketball Association star who has played in Russia during the league's offseason, was detained at a Moscow airport on February 17th with vape cartridges containing hashish oil in her luggage. In Russia, medical marijuana is illegal. On Tuesday, a member of Griner's defense team, Marina Blagovelina, says that the U.S. athlete forgot to take the medication out of her luggage before traveling to Russia.
We have a lot of mitigating factors, so we do hope that the court will take it into consideration. And the courts in Russia, in fact, has very broad discretion with regard to the sentence.
Griner faces a possible jail sentence of up to 10 years. The two-time Olympic champion, who has appealed to U.S. President Joe Biden to secure her release, has pled guilty but denied that she intended to break Russian law. Russia's new head of the state-controlled space corporation Roscosmos, Yuri Borisov, said Moscow will opt out of the International Space Station after 2024 and focus on building its own orbiting outpost. Borisov's statement reaffirmed previous declaration by Russian space officials about Moscow's intention to leave the space outpost after 2024. Now, despite increased tensions between Washington and Moscow, the U.S. space agency NASA and Roscosmos made a deal earlier this month for astronauts to continue riding Russian rockets and for Russian cosmonauts to catch lifts to the International Space Station with SpaceX beginning this fall. The agreement ensures that the space station will always have at least one American and one Russian on board to keep both sides of the orbiting outpost running smoothly. That's according to NASA and Russian officials. As we mentioned on yesterday's program, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting Egypt, Ethiopia, Uganda, and the Republic of Congo this week, trying to counteract Western blame of Russia for a growing global food crisis. Experts say that Russia will push its own narrative as to why it's attacking Ukraine and use the visit to show it has friends. Mohamed Youssef has those details.
Russia's foreign minister was in the Republic of Congo Monday to meet with the leadership of the Central African nation to bolster international support for his country. Stephen Grast is the head of the Russia-Africa program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. He says Russia will play the victim card when meeting with African leaders.
Is a propaganda war as much as it is a shooting war. And we've seen from the Ukrainian side how successfully President Zelensky has used social media. He gives daily messages. He's talked to parliaments and to Congress and groups around the world virtually. He's seen it being on the front line. And Russia's mounting a counteroffensive. So I think this is all part of that same trend. It's interesting that it's a physical visit rather than just online visits. I think it's deliberately calculated to show that Russia is not isolated, that Russia still has friends in the world, that Russia still cares about Africa.
In Egypt, Lavrov met with the Arab League leadership, seeking the support of the group's 22 member states and accusing the West of ignoring his country's security concerns. He's expected to do the same when he visits African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa. Wale Olosola teaches international politics at Nigeria's Obafemi Awolowo University. He says Russia is using the African visit to clean up its image after invading Ukraine and seeks to influence the continent.
The visit actually reverberates across all of Africa. So there is a message it sends, you know, globally in terms of the new relationship that Russia is trying to court. Russia can make a big deal out of these visits to at least give the impression to other members of the global community that it is not isolated. The other part of it may be a long-term gain, you know, for Russia. These kind of visits are not just diplomatic or purely on the surface. Certainly, we expect that some deals may be signed or maybe just informally agreed upon, you know, with Russia, especially with respect to countries that are having issues with security.
The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says Africa imports almost half of its military equipment from Russia and knows that arms export is a critical component of Russia's economic growth. The number of African countries buying weapons from Russia has grown to 21 from 16 in the 2000s. A handful of countries are also using Russian-supplied mercenaries. Olosola says African countries should use opportunities such as Lavrov's visit to push for their own interest.
A country like Russia, certainly, even though it cannot play the same role as China and the United States has been doing in Africa, certainly do understand that such relations with Africa will come at a cost. You know, must be willing to provide, you know, some kind of concrete economic support, financial support, you know, for these challenged economies, you know, in Africa. I think it's an opportunity for African countries to restate, you know, African position on the Ukraine crisis. And of course, to see ways out beyond the Western relations and the benefits they get from Western countries, they can also open new vista of relations with Russia in a way that serves their own national economic interest.
At the United Nations General Assembly in March, 38 African countries condemned Russia's war on Ukraine. But supporters of Ukraine accuse African countries of doing too little to hold Russia accountable for its invasion. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Drought in the Horn of Africa has tens of millions of people facing malnutrition and hunger across Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has driven up food prices, leaving aid groups struggling to help affected communities as they head toward a failed rainy season for a fifth straight year. Juma Majanga rounds us out.
Even from a distance, the signs of distress are visible. Moving closer, the desperate situation becomes more vivid. On a World Vision organized trip for journalists, VOA witnessed the devastating impact of the ongoing drought in Kenya's northern frontier. With livelihoods diminished, families here have been left to survive on inedible berries known as edung in Turkana.
The drought came and killed all our livestock that we used to depend on. Now we have been left with nothing. All we can eat are these wild berries.
Local Kimat must cook the berries for 3 days to make them edible and reduce their harm to the body. Residents say it gives the children diarrhea, but it helps them survive. The mother provides for her 5 young children because her husband is sick and unable to help. Epakan Ekiru, a 19-year-old mother of 2, lives a few steps away. Her husband left 2 years ago with the herd to look for pasture and water. She's afraid the wild berries will run out.
For now, we're eating these wild berries. If they run out, we'll die. There will be nothing else to eat.
Kenya declared drought a national disaster in September 2021, with nearly 3.5 million people at risk of acute hunger and in need of humanitarian assistance. That includes more than half of the population in Marsabit County, according to government figures. Children and women are the most affected. Officials say sometimes the government's food relief and cash transfers to the most vulnerable are not enough.
I've had cases where people come to the offices, they stay put. Even if there is no relief food from the government, you have to go back into your pocket and give them something so that they go back home and buy something to eat.
The soaring food prices resulting from Russia's invasion of Ukraine have affected humanitarian aid operations, making the situation even worse.
In the community we visited, ideally they should be getting 100% of their rations. But by now, because there are pipeline breaks of commodities, because of the shortages created, we could only give them, 55% of their food.
For residents of Purapul village, the nearest health center is over 60 kilometers away. Twice a month, the aid group World Vision helps severely malnourished children and pregnant women. Officials say many can no longer afford to make the trip themselves as the drought has claimed their livestock, their only source of income. Drought is not new to this region. But experts say as climate change accelerates the intensity and frequency of drought, and events like Russia's war in Ukraine worsen the problem, many worry the hunger crisis in East Africa will be forgotten. Juma Majanga for VOA News, Loyangalani, Marsabit, Kenya.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up with the latest developments, not only on Ukraine, but news and events from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media feeds. Just be sure to follow at VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice. of America, Washington, D.C.